Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The biggest breaking news stories, an outspoken opinion. The Breakfast Briefing with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio.
Well, good morning to you. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Lots to talk about. No doubt, of course, Ukraine will be taking the lead today. Of course, still a lot of pressure on the Prime Minister over Nadeem Zahawi and his tax affairs. That trans rapist story ain't going away. I know Nicola Sturgeon would love it to go away, but it isn't. The thing she says never happens is happening all the time. So we're going to be talking about that. Cost of living, of course, as well. Oh, yeah. And Matt Hancock being harassed on his journey on the tube in London yesterday. A man has actually been arrested on assault charges. But a lot of people really seem to think it's perfectly OK for people to be haranguing politicians in public spaces. Should they be? Well, we'll talk about that as well. And joining me for all the chat this morning, I'd like to say it's Conservative commentator Benedict Spence. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let's talk about tanks. We've all had to become experts on tanks, haven't we? The US announced that yesterday, well, last night, they were going to be sending 31 M1 Abrams tanks. We've already known about the Bradley armoured vehicles as well. Germany announced, again, after much soul-searching and prevarication, 14 Leopard 2 tanks will be sent. But crucially also, they are going to allow export licences for other European countries, not just Eastern Europe, Spain, Denmark, many other countries who bought those tanks or release them from Germany to be allowed to send those over to Ukraine. So that could lead to some 100 extra tanks going. UK already had promised 14 Challenger 2 tanks. Given that President Zelensky basically been asking for these since word go, and we're 11 months into this war, given that these probably won't arrive until 3, 4, 5, 6 months, people need to be trained, the supply chains for these is huge. And now we've already got President Zelensky saying, right, and about those long-range missiles and the fighter jets we've been asking for since last February as well. Is this too little too late? Is this a game changer? Is it a step change? Does this escalate the war? What do you make of it all?
I don't think it actually changes very much at all. I think that the state on the ground is pretty much a stalemate at the moment, although we will see probably a very large Russian surge in the spring. The deployment of these tanks, if they get there in time, might help to check that, but I don't think it's necessarily going to help Ukraine to win back great swathes of territory. It'll be bit by bit. And the way to think about it now, sadly, is a bit more like the Western Front in the First World War than it is anything like the Second World War or anything comparably recent. 100 tanks, as the Russians themselves have experienced, can disappear very quickly is the problem, even if they are challengers.
Dragged away by farmers in their tractors.
Well, even if they are Challengers and Abrams, which are very good tanks, or Leopard tanks, they are very good, but they can still be hit by drones very easily. They are susceptible to missile fire. And this is the thing. They want the long-range missiles.
The Bradley armoured vehicles apparently really aren't. They're virtually indestructible. But isn't one of the issues, I mean, the Russians have got tanks which are, and the tanks that the Ukrainian army were using, I mean, largely their tanks now are just basically, they've managed to capture various Russian tanks, paint the blue yellow flag on, they're done. Yeah. And they know how to work them, they've got the spare parts, etc. But actually some of the new tanks that new old tanks that Russia is planning to deploy are pretty hopeless. And I think it was even during one demonstration, one that they were out for the Red Square, the big sort of military parade, and on its very first outing, one broke down. I mean, someone got sent to a gulag for a very long time for that. But the crucial thing, as we've seen from word go in this war, has been about supply and logistics. This old line that an army marches on its stomach, your ability to feed your troops, to provide fuel for and spare parts and maintenance. And you need a lot of maintenance for these vehicles.
You do.
They're not just big chunks of metal.
No.
They are incredibly high-tech machines.
It's one of the things about sort of Western armaments is that as they get more developed and they get more sophisticated, they do get more complex, they get more expensive. And actually, there are more ways for them to break down, as anybody who's ever sort of dealt with a software issue.
Yeah.
People would be surprised at just how much computing goes into building tanks, let alone aircraft, which are only kept in the air by the vast array of computer banks.
And that's the crucial thing in a war zone. We've seen, you know, with Elon Musk's satellites and things that are actually making it possible to have communication and things. But in terms of supply lines, we know that the reason why Russia was not able to seize Kyiv was because their supply lines were broken by the Ukrainians. There's been some incredibly clever, tactical action on attacking those supply lines. But again, when you look at, for instance, like the M1 Abrams tanks from the United States, which are, you know, apparently just utterly brilliant and amazing, but very complicated, very heavy. They're slower than some of the Leopard 2 tanks. But also, crucially, I mean, I was fascinated to read this. They run on jet fuel. Driving through eastern Ukraine and you're just stopping at a petrol station. Oh, good. There's a jet fuel power pump. That's
the sort of thing
case.
You probably can find on the black market in Russia, certainly. But, I mean, the thing actually that the US and NATO should remember is what is part of the reason why the Soviet Union was able to overcome the Nazis in the Second World War. The Nazis had these fantastic, high, sophisticated tanks, and the Soviets just made more tanks. That was, you know, the Americans out, you know, they just swarmed the Japanese by outproducing them. Actually, numbers will subdue high-tech stuff.
Well, understand, interestingly, one of the key things about these Leopard 2 tanks is they are very sophisticated machinery, but they are simpler, they're easier to train on. They're made here in Europe, easier to transport, they can get there quicker. They're very, very fast, they're lighter, better for the terrain. And so these are the tanks that everyone's been crying out for. And we know an awful lot of Western countries are willing to give them. Now, leaving aside that military aspect, whether it's a game changer or not, we're going to be talking to former Chief of Defence Staff at Lord Dannett later in the show. I think he'll have a few ideas on that. The concern, particularly from Germany, I mean, and Germany basically holding the reins and stopping, because they're the manufacturer of these tanks, stopping other countries from exporting them because the export licence bans them from sending them elsewhere. Germany has been angst-ridden and just wringing its hands for quite a long time of this war. I mean, all they sent for a while was just some helmets. I mean, gee, thanks, to help, you know, our allies in
helmets.
Ukraine. Very good, very well-made and very efficient helmets.
The best helmets,
But, yes, you know, but not much use, really, in the big scheme of things. Everyone's saying, look, it's been very difficult for them because the hangover of Nazism and the Second World War and this urge not to be militaristic and the protection. But actually, it's not just, and there is that issue. Now, I lived in Germany. I know that that is what a lot of certainly younger people feel.
Yeah.
But also, actually, they're afraid. They're afraid of Russia. They haven't got there is no major physical obstacle between, you know, Poland, other than Poland, between Germany and Russia. They haven't got terrain that they, you know, to, but also crucially, they're still being reliant on Russian gas. They don't want Russia to hold things against Germany. They want to just quietly play a little Switzerland-type role, really, and come out of this without too much damage. That is weak and cowardly and lily-livered, is it not?
It is, especially given that part of the sort of the mental hangover comes from the fact that half of Germany was occupied effectively by the Russians for a very long time. East Germany was a product of the political system that came from that. East Prussia is still occupied by Russia. Kaliningrad is Königsberg.
That he knows these things.
Well, I mean, and until very recently, it was a German-speaking part of the world, and now it's full of Russians because they were all expelled, and there's still a lot of mental hangover up over the atrocities that were committed against those people as well. You can understand why Germany, which has set it up in the post-war period as this great sort of diplomatic soft power, wants to see a different way of changing things. But if you are going to position yourself at the centre of this superstate, which the EU is, that comes with some responsibilities. It's a similar situation with China. The amount of sort of business investments that German companies have in China. So Germany is very wary about upsetting China too much. And there does come a point where the warmongers in Britain and the United States have to say, well, are you a major power or aren't you?
Now, this is it. This is the key thing. Because, again, they've also had this massive economic benefit. We get their cheap Russian gas. Oh, well, how's that working out for you? And by the way, you know, what are the reasons why we are sitting in cold homes at the moment? We're going to be talking later on about ambulance staff. We're taking people into hospital because their homes are so cold, they're getting sick. Reason is because we can't afford energy at a decent price. Why not? Well, we weren't relying on Russian energy. It was only about, 3% of our gas coming from Russia because we were a little bit saner than Germany. Not much, but a little bit saner. But because Germany can't get their gas from Russia, we are now competing with Germany and other European European nations reliant on Russian gas, and that for liquid natural gas, and therefore we are having to pay higher prices. Mm. So it's kind of, Germany is one of the reasons why we're in this economic mess that we're in. But also, and I don't agree with Donald Trump on many things, but he was 100% right on this. All these NATO countries that were not paying their full way, and neither were we, to be fair, as well, expecting American taxpayers to fund their security. Germany has had a wonderful booming economy, living off the value of the euro, which has messed up all the southern European economies, and not spending very much on defence, claiming always because we're not militaristic, but no doubt expecting us to provide weaponry if they were invaded, and the Americans. I think Germany is a busted flush right now.
I think this is not lost on a lot of countries in Eastern Europe that joined the European Union expecting something and got something very different. I mean, you can see that reflected in the attitude of Poland, I think Poland is basically taking the stance of, if you're not going to lead Europe, well, that's fine. You know, we were happy to sort of let that be so that we weren't in Russia's orbit, but we can't stand here as the next frontier country and go, you guys do you. We're going to send
weapons. Does anyone seriously believe, okay, Ukraine's not in NATO, although very likely to be very soon. Does anyone seriously believe that the Germans would, you know, you can be 100% confident the Germans will come to the aid of the Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia and Lithuania?
None of those countries believe it.
No, exactly.
None of those countries believe it.
Exactly. There's so much more to talk about. We're going to talk about Nadine Sahawi and his taxes. It was the Prime Minister right to keep him there. Question marks about Dominic Raab, the Deputy Prime Minister. 24 separate civil servants apparently have lodged complaints about him bullying them. And of course, that trans rapist story, extraordinary revelation from his wife. Because he's a man. He's a man. No gender recognition certificate. His wife says it's all a sham. And that he's only claimed to be a trans woman because he was charged with rape. I know. I'm as shocked as you are.
The Breakfast Briefing with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.